Tyler here from Between Sundays. Look, this is part two of our conversation with David Bell about the Enneagram. If you're looking for part one, we talk about numbers 2 through 6 on the Enneagram, and you're going to want to listen to that. It's fascinating discussion. He's kind of a resident expert. So this episode here, part two, will focus on numbers 7 through 1. It's weird because it's circle, but we're starting with 7, going to 1. And yeah, download, subscribe, tell a friend. We love you. And now back to the episode. Are you ready to jump to number 7?
If Barry
7.
Oh my.
I'm always excited to talk about 7s.
Is that because you didn't want me to talk about 7s?
No,
that's exciting.
That's it.
That's the excited horn?
I thought that was
the same horn that like beeps me at the end.
No, that's different.
That's a different horn. That's a negative horn. This is a
positive
really
horn?
Pumped up horn.
Mm. It's a very resourceful horn.
All right, then let's start
number
talking
7.
About
ready?
You. Sure.
Go.
Probably the most important aspect of understanding a 7 is how much they avoid pain and how they reframe pain. And they do it faster than you can say the word pain. And so if you love and care for a 7, you've got to get them in touch with their pain.
You hear that, Jed? We gonna get you in touch with your pain.
Now that was a little mean because I just focused on the pain.
What pain? I don't know what you're talking about. I have no pain ever. I don't
so
even.
Barry's a 7.
Yeah, so the 7's the adventurer, the enthusiast, the fun person, the whoop whoop person over here to my left. That's going on and on. But best for Barry to talk about being a 7.
Tell us about your pain.
Well, I saw Barry live out a 7 clearly a couple weeks ago. We went to a cabin in the woods as our small group, and there was talk about going on a hike, and I was walking down a hill and Barry was sprinting up the hill, and he did one of those like fist pump in the air jumps, and he said, adventure.
Yep.
That is
only half
through and through.
Only half joking too. I really genuinely love it.
Did you have your best thong sandals on as you
walked
downhill?
I was more prepared. I was more prepared for this hike.
When I first took the test, I looked at what it said about a 7, and I was like, there's no way that it's me, because the 7 is a hedonist and someone potentially
pleasure
someone
seeker
who seeks pleasure. And I was very disciplined, and I had all the rules in order, and I had my life in order, and I thought this couldn't be me. The more I looked into it though, the more I realized that my motivation is constantly to seek comfort and security and enjoyment in everything. And I'm nothing if I don't have another adventure coming to plan for and get excited about and to go on. Mm-hmm. Like, I want new experiences. I've over the course of my life, I've had like 73 different hobbies and interests. And my slogan for my life is, I may swim in a lot of pools, but I always dive in head first. And
that should be our sign off.
It would be for me. So for me, being a 7, and only now, only recently have I realized just how often I do those things as a way of feeling.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I noticed the daydreams that I have, the more outlandish the daydream, the more likely I'm struggling with something and unwilling to admit it. And so
how does that feel then? Are you like disappointed once you learn that? Or are you like...
No, it just makes more sense. And now I'm like, oh, no wonder I always love... thinking about, like, literally, okay, so we were on a family vacation down in Florida, and me and Olivia were in the car driving back to the airport to go home. And as we're driving out, she's a 4. And so let's take this moment to think back on the whole vacation and just reflect on how wonderful it was and how great it felt to be with family and everything like that. And I'm like, so let's see, in a few weeks, we'll be getting in the car, we'll be going on this trip to Toronto.
And
so
my goodness.
I was already on to the next one.
You're going to Toronto?
Yeah, yeah.
Where are you going to Toronto?
We are doing a vegan restaurant crawl in Toronto. Different reason than the normal Toronto trip.
Really?
Yeah.
Why Toronto? They have the best
vegan
restaurants?
They have a lot of vegan restaurants, and they're within driving distance. They're one of the top
vegan restaurants.
Yeah. Olivia and I are not vegans. We're vegetarians, but this is interesting too. Another difference between the 7 and the 4. I'm a vegetarian because I love animals. She's a vegetarian because she hates animal suffering.
Yeah. Wow.
Opposites attract, guys.
Just telling you.
I'm married to a 7, and even this morning, last night we were talking about a lot of this, and she said a lot of the same things. Like, I'm nothing if I don't have something to look forward to, even if it's, I know I'm going to get a coffee.
Yeah.
Like, even if I know that tomorrow I'm going to Starbucks to get a coffee, that is enough for me to find joy in what's ahead.
So it can be simple pleasures. It doesn't have to be.
Very much so.
It
doesn't have to be elaborate.
But when we go on vacations, we're not even there yet. She's like, we only have like 6 days left. I'm like, yeah, we do. Let's enjoy it. Or like
so does
day
she
two,
have a
she's like,
swing?
Can you believe
like
we're
me.
About to leave in like 4 days?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Wow. Stay present to the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sevens are awesome though. I love sevens because if it weren't for sevens, I would probably stay in my house all day.
That's true, sir. Yeah.
True
yeah.
story.
They bring life. The interesting thing that people, I think, perceive of sevens is that they are impulsive and spontaneous to the point where they're not very focused. The thing about sevens is that spontaneous impulsiveness, and it can seem that way, and yet they're very grounded and very calculating. They're in the thinking triad. They do think. And I was reflecting even this week of something that dawned on me of I don't know any number that's more about being on time than sevens. I think every seven I
no
know.
No way.
Wow.
Every seven I know is... And this is, I know could be wrong here. I know I'm overstating it, but I started thinking through various sevens and they are on time
oh
or
goodness,
early
yes.
all the
is
time.
Is that true of Jed?
That's ridiculously
so
true of Jed.
It's very true of me.
It's definitely
oh
not
gosh.
True of Lauren.
Oh, wait, maybe it has something
Ron
to do
Stoller,
with the wings.
Maybe. I mean,
is she a
Ron
wing
Stoller's
six?
A seven and he is always on time.
Yes.
Anyway, saw numerous people.
Wow.
So it just was a
so
thought
I'm
about
a
sevens.
Six married to a seven, and that has been...
Yeah, interesting combination.
Oh, my
yeah.
goodness. Yes, it's been very interesting. Yeah. Hey, let's think this through. I think we ought to slow down and really consider whether or not we let's will go. Perish on this roller coaster. No, I want to be in the front row with the kids by my side. Yes, very scary.
One time when Lauren and I were dating, we were going to a movie, and we drove separate because we were coming from two separate parts of town. I'm on time. I'm always on time, if I can help it.
It's true.
And she was not only 10 minutes late to a movie, which drives me insane. She was not only 10 minutes late, she went into the wrong theater. So I was sitting out, like, waiting. I'm like, where are you? She's like, I'm in the theater.
At the wrong movie?
She's at the right building. She's in the wrong room.
But the same.
But they had like four showings of the same movie.
Okay.
So she's in the wrong room.
The one that started at the time that she.
And
arrived.
So she was like 30 minutes late.
Wow.
Here's another thing about at least it's been true of me, and maybe you guys with your seven spouses can speak into this. But I always want to share every experience that I'm mm-hmm. having with people I care about, and mm-hmm. and whether it's this new thing I learned about, like oh my gosh, let me tell you about mm-hmm. this thing, or hey, let's watch this movie together because it means something to me,
right. mm-hmm.
and I know that you're gonna feel the same way as me, and so I want to draw you into it. Is that mm-hmm. is that true of Jed?
Yeah, it is true of Jed. But I would have said before coming here and learning about all of this Enneagram stuff, I would have said that was because of the way he was brought up. He was brought up in a very close-knit community where he was constantly surrounded by other people, and he's always been described as a people person. That's just part of who he is. So I would have said, oh man, like. You desire to have people near you because that's all you ever knew growing up. People everywhere, you know, but no, like he doesn't want to watch football alone. No way. It's way more fun to watch football with any other person who enjoys football. Like he wants to be that guy that jumps off the couch and laughs and high fives and, you know, all
awesome.
That stuff. Like, yeah, yeah. We're like my dad, he likes watching football, but he'll fall asleep watching football. Like it doesn't have to be a communal event. For Jed, most things he desires to be a communal event.
I'm devastated when someone else is like on their phone when I'm trying to show them an important movie or something. I'm like, just be in the moment with me.
Is your dad a Bears fan? Is that why
my dad
asleep?
Is. Oh, that's so bad. He is a Bears fan, but no, that's not why he falls asleep.
When I took the assessment, no, the inventory. When I took the inventory, I had like a 0.4% seven.
It's about as much as mine.
I have a very low seven.
A very low yeah. seven. My wife is like
that's why you married
the exact opposite. That's why I love her. I want more of that.
Yeah.
I wish I wanted to watch stuff with other people, but I'm just like Super Bowl rolls around and they're like, what party are we gonna go to for the Super Bowl? And can we just watch it here by ourselves?
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep moving. Number eight. Ready?
You're almost sure. there.
Assertive, strong, confident, and if they're not careful, a bull in a china shop without realizing that they are in a china shop. Eights are great.
Me and Barry are giving you the face.
Yeah, what's up with that, guys?
There it is. He said bull.
Don't we need eights, though?
In a china shop.
Yes, we need eights. Eights are great. I said that phrase at the end on purpose because they are the most misunderstood on the Enneagram.
You wouldn't want that fours? China to not be broken, would you?
No. Yeah.
We need eights.
Fours are the most complex number on the Enneagram, people say.
They're going to love that you said that.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And eights are the most misunderstood, especially female eights. They're very misunderstood.
Oh, interesting. I could totally see that.
They are given the wrong name by people. Not very nice.
Yeah. So in my experience, I'm an eight.
Yes. And a quite healthy one in my estimation.
Yeah.
I give you props.
Well, that's been an effort.
Spend some time together.
It's been an effort.
Your discipler must have spent a lot of time working with
David and I went through the way of discipleship for about 4 years, and it was just me crying profusely about surrendering and trusting because I was in control.
Yes, profusely talking about it.
Yeah. So in my experience, I've spent a lot of my life manipulating relationships, manipulating people, because I knew that I could have control, not just the relationship, but of myself enough to feel powerful or feel like that I was at least at a distance where I wouldn't get hurt. So, and every personality, I mean, every famous person that's an eight is like terrible, right? It's like Saddam Hussein.
Well, Saddam Hussein didn't self-identify as an eight. For all we know, he was a five. I mean, that's the problem.
But that's why no one wants to be an eight.
People talk about it from the external. So, you got to get away from that. That's
if you're
not
an
helpful
eight,
at all.
You are just like Hitler.
No. Did you not hear what he just said? That is not helpful at all.
Eights are great. Eights are great.
That's right.
Say it with me. One of my coworkers, Maggie, she's on maternity leave right now, but she's an eight, and it is actually great working with a healthy eight on my team. Anytime there was anything that went wrong or someone made an accusation or anyone, you know, would do something that would cross me even, she was on it. She was like absolutely ready to go to war over whatever it was. I say we was because we haven't worked while she's been having her baby, but I just love having an eight on my team.
Yeah.
Who knows that she's an eight and is willing to,
she
gets stuff done and she will not suffer a fool.
So eights,
I love it. I love it.
Want or are do not shy away from confrontation. We are not scared of it. We're the first ones to raise our hands to say, I'll do it. Like, I'm not scared of that.
Well, that's because you find intimacy and connection through it.
Through confrontation?
Yep.
What if you have a wing nine?
Then that's a little more challenging. If your wing is a nine, it's a little unusual. So nine with an eight wing or eight with a nine wing is what's the word we call it? It just creates a little bit of a tension because you have eight that's the highest energy number and nine that is truly the least energy number. But still the eight is going to win out and go after the confrontation and find it.
So like an arsonist firefighter where you like set the room on fire so you can put it out.
Yeah.
On a bad day.
Yeah.
So I said I've spent a lot of my life manipulating people. I don't want to stop there. Like I feel like I've grown in the last few years to recognize that unhealthy part. Mm-hmm. And I think that the eight that comes out now, I feel like is more productive. And I care a lot about the underdog in almost mm-hmm. every situation. And that's what's gotten me to care about things like racial injustice and the people who have special needs over in Ukraine and even people that go to Grace or work at Grace that they have a cause that they're taking up. I'm like, yes, I am on your side and I'm going to fight for you. Mm-hmm. So like, I feel like I've channeled that manipulation in a former life to healthy ways of really like distributing that. And so I like being an eight now. I said earlier that I wanted to be a five, but I like being an eight.
But you took it again last night.
I took it this morning and I'm still an eight.
This morning and you're still an eight.
Still an eight.
Well, it's a good example of what you said about manipulation. So you manipulate or you're vulnerable to manipulate so you're not controlled.
Exactly.
I manipulate because I want to be liked. So it's motivation. Mm-hmm. So that's where people would say, oh, three and eight. I mean, someone could assume that I'm an eight in certain circumstances mm-hmm. based on my leadership and about how I act mm-hmm. in a situation. There's no, I'm not. I mean, yes, it's a part of my personality and sometimes stronger than others. But again, motivation is the key of the Enneagram. And this is why telling people what their type is just really isn't usually helpful unless they're asking you to help them with what you know about the Enneagram to kind of determine.
Mm-hmm. Another phrase we use around here is I see in you, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, you could do that with an Enneagram, yes. But again, when we do an I see in you conversation, usually it's what we see in them that we are calling out of them that hopefully will be true. I think if I was to do that in that situation, I would more want to know somebody's type that they say they are in the Enneagram, mm-hmm. and then leverage that in an I see in you conversation to say, this is what is true of you that you may not realize. I know it's true because you've told me that this is your core, and this is what I know about your core identity, and this is how we can draw this out.
So. Number nine. Ready?
Number nine.
Don't like conflict at all. They sit on the top of the Enneagram figure because, in essence, they can see themselves in every number, and they make incredible coaches because they always see from other perspectives. Other perspectives as I got drowned out.
They don't like confrontation.
They don't like
conflict. So they're indecisive.
Conflict. They don't like conflict.
Are they indecisive?
Depends. Usually no, because they just say it doesn't matter. So they're not indecisive.
So how does that make a
great
coach?
Because they're not deciding anything. They're great coaches because they can see in other people they can see other people's perspectives and abilities and giftings, and they can call that out of them, and they can give them direction, but they're not giving direction based on something about themselves. They're giving direction based on something about the other person. So they can direct you in an area that you care about. Mm. It's not something that they necessarily have to care about or have a preference for.
What are some shortcomings?
Well, the nine has unfortunately been wounded with learning that their presence doesn't matter and that they shouldn't assert themselves. And so they have this perspective that because of that, anytime they do assert themselves, they create conflict, and that creates fragmentation. And in creating that fragmentation, then makes them not do well enough. They're driven to do well. They're driven to make things right, but they're going to do that by reconciling and harmonizing. Well, conflict doesn't do well to harmonize. Conflict creates more stress and more problems in their eyes, at least initially, and coming from their wounding message in childhood. So the shortcoming is that they avoid the conflict. They don't name what they need to name. They don't say their preferences. They then have those preferences, and because they haven't named them, it comes out passive-aggressively in some other form, or they get very stubborn, or they hold grudges in a closet, and then one day the closet door opens and all the grudges spill out, and they get very, very angry. And they actually have to hopefully deal with their anger. That's the like really worst-case scenario.
What do nines need from all the other numbers?
Affirmation.
I have two people in my life that are nines. One, I'm not going to use names because I'm not. One of them is maybe not as mature yet, a little younger. And I noticed that with him, he has not a lot of energy to put up a fight or to even mm-hmm. have opinions, and will get walked all over a lot.
It's exhausting by everybody. To them. Yep.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
However, I also have another friend, and she is a nine and is actually a really healthy nine. And it's incredible. She recently had to have a really hard conversation with some people that were in authority over her. And I mean, that's the kind of thing I would imagine most nines would never want to see happen, that you would actually be confronting a group of your superiors mm-hmm. in a way. And yet she did it in a way that not only was she able to speak honestly with mm-hmm. what was going on in her life, but she was able to do it and be cognizant of how it was affecting each of the people she was talking to. So she was able to like have that hard conversation while also caring for the needs of everybody else that she was talking to, which is, I think, an incredible gift. Oh, I don't be able to do that amazing. Very well. So,
and understand their perspective going into it. And
right.
So therefore she could speak to it in that moment. Yes. When a nine is healthy, they are phenomenal people in that way. There's just an awareness of who they are in themselves and in connecting with God. I think part of it is because of seeing from all the different perspectives that there's just this internal awareness of peace and harmony that they even have with the Spirit that's unique.
All right, last one. You ready? Number one.
Yes. They didn't like that I started with two because ones like order, right and wrong, black and white, clarity, can tend to be perfectionists, but are incredible reformers to change the world.
The good person.
The good person who has lost the message from childhood that they're actually good and has unconsciously assumed the message that they can't make mistakes. So they live with shoulds and oughts in their head. I should do this. I ought to do this all the time. And nothing is ever good enough.
Are they the most judgy?
Yes, because they judge themselves first.
Really?
So anytime you feel judgment from a one, you just have to recognize that they've spent the last 60 seconds judging themselves 100 times fold. Everything for a one goes back to it's never good enough. It's not right enough. So for a one personality, it's just patronizing to say to them, it's good. Leave it. That's good enough. Let's go on. I mean, it's like telling a four. Yeah. It's like telling a four, I understand how you feel. You don't. Nobody understands how a four feels. Not even another four understands how that four feels because it's unique to the four. It's completely patronizing to say to a one,
good enough.
Good enough. Oh, wow. It's never good enough to them in their head. Hmm. So I think what we have to realize as we interact with ones is this voice is there critiquing everything all the time for them.
How do we help them pass that?
One way would be to ask them questions. One of the key ways would be to ask them questions about, okay, it's not good enough, but how can I make it what you want it to be? Or we have a time limit and we've got to leave in 30 minutes. So how can I help you get it to the point where it is what it needs to be for today in the next 30 minutes? Get them to be thinking through.
Yeah.
Or if they say to you, for example, let's say a one moved into a new neighborhood and said, oh, we should have a different family over every night, every family on our cul-de-sac, every night for the next 2 weeks until we've had every family for dinner. We should have a dinner guest every night for the next 2 weeks. That's what we should do. Why should we do that?
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
I amen to that. because, or every week or whatever, because it's the should. When you hear the should come from one, it's asking them, why should we do that? So that they're thinking it through, because they're naturally going to do whatever should or ought is
right.
in unhealth, average to unhealth, or toward non-resourceful is a phrase we've used a little more today. Whatever they hear in their head that they should or ought to do, they're going to go do that. That's what they're vulnerable to do, and they're likely to do it unless they are moving towards health where they're asking themselves that question, should we do that? Is that really what we should do? And start to think that through.
So I know we're not supposed to put these things on our kids. You know, I've heard it that you shouldn't...
Don't type your kids.
Type your kids or even... try to take the assessment yourself until your mid-20s. Is that what you heard? Early 20s, mid-20s?
Milo's a three. Is that bad?
So the school of thought is changing. Not changing. I would say concessions are being made. Richard Rohr is the one who says, really not until your 30s should you engage the Enneagram, either through inventory assessment or trying to type yourself. And his main reason for that is you need time for that personality, that shield, mm-hmm. that false self energy. You need time to really get to know how powerful that is in your life, to really know yourself in that way. But to my 20-something friends who I've said that to, their response has been, so great, I've got to go another decade and a half of hurting yes. myself and other people yeah. without knowledge that could help me be kind and loving and gracious and right, more like Jesus. Right.
What number is Richard Rohr?
So he's a one. So
they should wait till they're 30.
Exactly.
Wait.
So we certainly engage it with young adults, and we've done that. All of our interns and residents, we use Enneagram significantly, and so I think it can be. But when you're talking about kids... Mm-hmm. Especially like they don't know. You don't know, they don't know. And to type a kid, your child, I have three children, 14, 12, and 7, to type them in one of the styles that you could just be wrong. Like mm-hmm. you're trying to gauge the motives of your son or daughter. So I wrote an email last week in response to the marriage workshop where someone asked about this with parenting. And I just said, you know, the challenge is, you know, if you have a 14-year-old son, is his laziness because he's a 9? Is it because he's a 5 because he has measured energy? Or is it because
he's a 14-year-old boy?
Four with lots of feelings. Or he's a 14-year-old boy who just has hormones that are making him lazy in that moment and he's tired. I mean, is the 8-year-old who loves...
That's what I said last week.
Is the 8-year-old helping set the table because she's a 2 who needs to meet the needs of everybody else, or a 1 who heard at church that Jesus was really good at serving other people, so that authority, that 1 or 6 respond to the authority, this is the right thing to do. You just don't know. Mm. It could be any of those things in that moment.
Yeah.
And so typing your son or daughter, there are books out there that will help you type them. I mean, there's an Enneagram for parenting that the authors openly say, no, these are our kids.
But
they're
you
this,
do not
this,
endorse
this.
Such books.
I endorse the book to help you, if you want to read it, to help you thinking about how to parent mm-hmm. different children of different personalities.
Well, I just don't want to bruise
you are,
my children.
You already are.
Oh my goodness. You just said that to a 6.
Yeah, I know.
Sky is falling. I'm picturing my 13-year-old boy, when he was in first grade, there was an art project he had to do just teaching kids to cut on the thick black line, just cut the shape out. And it wasn't to his liking. It wasn't perfect enough. And it's the first time we saw any sort of really painful emotional reaction come from my son when his teacher had to call me in for a conference later on to say that he had started to cry and he crumpled it up and he threw it away.
Because it wasn't perfect.
Because it wasn't perfect.
And it could have been because his eventually he'll learn his core is a one, or he could be a six who the authority said to do this project and the authority said to cut along the line. And he so has to please the authority, but you don't know which one.
Yeah. That's been a common thread through his life. I've watched him do a math problem where the number didn't look perfect. It wasn't that the outcome was wrong. It was that the four was misshapen or something. And he erased that thing three times.
Did he get it perfect? Yeah.
Three times. This kid.
So what do you do, right?
Yeah, as a parent.
So what we are aware of is I'm blanking on the names right now. Rizzo and Hudson from Understanding the Enneagram and the Enneagram Institute. They have a great compilation of capturing what I've mentioned a few times, the lost childhood message and the unconscious childhood message. So for a one, that is, they've lost the message that they're good, just in who they are, and they've learned that it's not okay to make mistakes. So if I saw that in one of my children, if I was you, I would think to myself, okay, I don't know that his core is a one. I don't know for certain, but I do know I'm seeing that mistakes are not tolerated. Mm-hmm. I want to reinforce the message to him in his life that it's okay to make mistakes, not in a patronizing way, but in a way that says it's okay, you know, or, okay, you've erased that four three times. Is there anything I can do to help you make that four look like you want it to look? That kind of question. So you can step towards them in that way. So Betsy and I have an awareness with particularly our boys. We're like, we have some thoughts of where they might be, but no sense of certainty. In fact, just the other day with one of my sons, I started thinking about a number that I've never thought might be his core, and just starting to think, wait a minute, have we been not even in the spectrum, right, of thinking about different numbers? So in that, kind of listening for things, watching for things, but and so approaching them with certain affirmations that relate to the messages. But the most significant thing you can do, honestly, as a parent, is ignore all that and be healthy yourself. If you are healthy in who you are, then your marriage can be healthy and your parenting can be healthy. If you're unhealthy, you can do whatever you want with those childhood messages. Yeah. You can do whatever you want with knowing the Enneagram. And if you're unhealthy, it doesn't matter. People will ask me, are there better typings for marriage? Like, is there certain numbers that have certain problems?
Yeah, that was one
that
of the questions. We got.
Six, yeah. Seeking seven.
So, and yes, you could say,
Craigslist.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, you probably have it out there. New version of eHarmony. Yes, that you can think of things like, for example, an eight married to a nine. There's uniquenesses there of energy level and things like that. But there's no two types that automatically are like, oh, these two numbers together are better than these two numbers. Or here's like the bottom combinations are here, the top combinations are here. The issue is health. Mm. So Barry talked about four and seven being different. The way he described it, they have the opportunity in their differences to so complement one another very simply by the fact that Olivia is feeling dominant, and Barry, by his number seven, represses his painful feelings. Olivia will step towards him and say, your lost childhood message, she won't use this language, but she might say, hey, you don't think you can depend on anybody. Nobody's here to take care of you. I can handle every feeling you have. And Barry's like, yeah, I know she can handle every feeling I have because she can handle her own feelings. So I can enter my pain because I have a spouse who's healthy and understands feelings. On the flip side, Olivia can get paralyzed by her feelings and not do anything. Barry, as a seven, is going to do. Stuff is going to happen in his life. He's going to move on things and be action-oriented. And the gift he offers her is to move her out of her feelings towards doing that gives her more and more health or draws her to more and more health. If they're both unhealthy, they're gonna kill each other. But as you move towards health, it doesn't matter the combination.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like that's what Olivia wants. Why don't we all just die?
Oh my goodness,
Olivia, that's so not fair. Tyler just said that to you if you're listening.
So bad.
So that's my long answer about parenting and as Betsy and I navigated ourselves and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
So you taught about this morning, right now, and tonight again.
Yeah, I do teach you.
Wow.
Tonight.
David.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Thanks.
You should make like a workout DVD, but instead Enneagram DVD.
Yeah. Workouts
maybe
for fours.
Working out while talking about Enneagram.
Workouts tailored to your number and your style.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Sleeping for nines. That's good. I like that.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining
us. Thanks for having me. You guys are fun.
That was awesome.
Every time I talk to you, I learn something new about the Enneagram, and I thought that I had understood it all, but I keep learning.
I learn when I teach about it, so that's good.
You do?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. You learn listening and talking, because the best people to talk about the Enneagram number is someone who's aware of who they are and starts to talk about who they are. Well, that's the best way to know about the number, the person.
Well, thanks again. Yeah. Thanks for being
here.
Thank you. Next week, we are going to gather again, and we are going to talk on the topic of singleness. Barry is preaching this coming weekend, and
that's right.
We hope to have a pretty hearty conversation about singleness and all that comes with it. But I did not think of a sign-off, and so I would love for Maren to sign us off. But until next week, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God between Sundays.
See you next week.